Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My guest this half hour is Larry Diamond. Diamond is a respected political scientist. He's spent decades promoting democracy in dozens of countries around the world, and now he feels this country, our country, is facing the most serious constitutional crisis since Watergate, and perhaps since the American Civil War, way back in the time of Abe Lincoln in the 1800s. Diamond is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution and Stanford's Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies, also professor by courtesy of political science and sociology at Stanford University, and past director of its Center on Democracy. He's the founding co-editor of the Journal of Democracy, and he's edited or co-edited 50 books on democracy. His latest is titled Ill Winds: Saving Democracy from Russian Rage, Chinese Ambition, and American Complacency. Larry Diamond, what a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Ben. It's great to be with you.
Why are you writing this book, and why now?
Well, I'm writing it because I care about democracy, and I think it is both the best form of government and vital to the American national interest and to our values. I'm writing it now because you've already said what I think, that I think both in the United States and globally we are facing the most serious challenge to liberal democracy that we've confronted, at least in many decades.
Mm-hmm. Okay, liberal democracy. Make sure that our listeners know we're not talking about liberal versus conservatism right there, right?
No, we're talking about a democracy that does not just give a temporary narrow majority of 50% plus one the right to do anything, but also protects our liberties. That's the sense in which I'm choosing liberal. And the rule of law. So any high-quality democracy, and a democracy in the founding spirit of the American Constitution, rests on one principle of majority rules, a second principle of minority rights and protection of liberty, and a third principle of checks and balances and constraints on the potential for abuse of power. Those are the three legs of liberal democracy.
Okay. In your book, you write that the Trump presidency has been a gift to the autocrats in China and Russia, mentioned in your title. Explain that.
Well, first of all, is the rhetoric and symbolism of a president who has acknowledged a loving relationship with the most awful tyrant in the world, Kim Jong-un in North Korea, and who has warmly befriended Vladimir Putin, the murderous crown prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, the Egyptian dictator General al-Sisi, and I could go on and on, while at the same time disparaging and creating needless friction with our democratic allies in Europe. Beyond this, we have a president who is contemptuous of democratic and constitutional norms and constraints, while at the same time not acting to defend the United States against Russian subversion and questioning whether it's even happening.
Mm-hmm. What's the greatest evidence you see that this president is not committed to democratic values?
Well, I think the greatest evidence is his behavior and his rhetoric going back to the 2016 election campaign, when he was stirring up his audiences to a feverish pitch not only of demonization and intolerance of the opposition, but even welcoming of the use of violence against hecklers and critics. Give them a punch in the eye, like we used to do. Throw a tomato at them. What kind of rhetoric is this for a presidential candidate, not to mention a president? Now we have him calling the New York Times treasonous because he doesn't like their coverage. We have him calling the press the enemies of the people. We have him calling Democrats in the Congress treasonous because they didn't stand up and applaud his State of the Union message. This is the kind of language, posture, rhetoric that we get from dictators, not from a democratically elected president of the most important democracy in the world. And we have him obstructing justice in the Russia probe, according to the ample evidence of the Mueller report.
Mm-hmm. You point out in your book that you feel the erosion of democracy in our country did not start with Trump. Explain some of the trends that you feel led up to the election of Donald Trump in 2016.
Well, one has been the deepening polarization of our politics over many years and the fragmenting of our public sphere, including the one that you are trying to contribute to with your radio show, by the narrow casting that's happening through cable television and now through social media, so that people live in these information and opinion bubbles and increasingly don't talk to one another or even receive the same body of, quote, facts. Beyond that, you have had the Republican Party for over a decade now moving more toward one ideological end of the spectrum. Now we see it in a kind of symmetrical reaction with the Democrats in the primary processes in the United States. And it's just hard to get anything done. And then people get even more frustrated and in some ways even more polarized, and we're in a downward spiral here.
Mm-hmm. So what is your ultimate warning here? That this, it seems to be you're painting a continuum here. Where are we? I guess you've already said where we are, more or less, now. What is your warning for where we may end up unless something is done?
Well, Ben, it's really twofold. Internationally, I think we're at a tipping point where if we don't stand in defense of democracy and human rights around the world and sanction and call out the authoritarian slide of more and more uncertain democracies led by autocratically inclined leaders like Duterte in the Philippines or the Law and Justice Party in Poland, if we don't call out and stand against that internationally, we could see a wave of new democratic breakdowns in the world following the model of the demise of democracy under Viktor Orban in Hungary or under President Erdogan in Turkey or before that Venezuela, Russia, and so on and so forth. Domestically, I think we've got to choose our words and frame our analysis carefully and responsibly. Trump is not a fascist. It doesn't help to call him one. But he is violating and undermining democratic norms. And I do think he has committed, again, if you read the Mueller report and look at the evidence, impeachable offenses. And I think our democratic culture is being degraded by this use of language, treating the enemies and the independent press, the opposition and the independent press as treasonous enemies. This is a kind of language that is used in authoritarian regimes. And it's dragging us down, I'd say, toward more and more dysfunction in our democracy and abuse of power. And it doesn't have to happen. I think there are reforms we can adopt that we are beginning to embrace at the local and state level around the country that can turn us in a better, more workable direction.
If you've just joined us, Larry Diamond is my guest this half hour. His book is Ill Winds, Saving Democracy from Russian Rage, Chinese Ambition, and American Complacency. He's past director of the Center on Democracy at Stanford University. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution and Stanford's Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies. Many decades spent writing about, researching, and promoting democracy, not only in this country, but around the world in dozens of countries. He's now writing in this book, for instance, after 3 decades in which democracy was spreading and another in which it was stagnating and slowly eroding, we are now witnessing a global retreat from freedom, according to Larry Diamond. Well, let's talk, Larry, about the remedies that you see to the current trends. Let's take them step by step. Polarization. How do we fight polarization?
Well, there are a lot of ways we can do it just by more responsible rhetoric and a willingness to listen to our neighbors, our coworkers, people who disagree with us, and read a little bit more widely across the conventional and social media landscapes, listen to a variety of radio shows and have an open mind. But the most important thing, Ben, is I think we've got to change the incentive structure that is confronting our politicians. Right now, if you want to get elected to the Iowa State Legislature, if you want to get elected to Congress, if you want to be the governor of Iowa, you've got to win the nomination of your party, Republican or Democrat, in what is increasingly a low turnout party primary dominated by more ideologically passionate, determined voters. And this is pushing our politics in a more and more polarized direction. If you then get to a general election, and those are the two options on offer, and both of the parties have offered quite ideologically distant, if not extreme, candidates, the problem is that voters are left with no other real choice in the general election, because any other choice is going to be called a spoiler. And indeed, he or she is likely to be. If you vote for that candidate, you're probably wasting your vote, because the Republican or Democrat is going to win, even with less than a majority of the vote. If you move to ranked choice voting, where you don't just vote for one candidate, but you rank your choices, 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever it is, and your first choice doesn't make it, finishes last, and no one wins a majority of the vote, then your vote is not wasted. It's transferred to your second choice. And this is going to lift the stigma against voting for some third alternative. It could be an independent candidate in the center. It could be a Libertarian or a Green candidate or whatever. But somebody is going to have to win a majority of the vote in the district, and voters are going to have more choices. Voters are going to have the ability to shape the race more fully in their own hands. American democracy, I think, is going to be opened up. And members of Congress and state legislatures, in many cases, I think are going to have more of an incentive to reach across the aisle and compromise.
Address the issue you raised of narrow casting, that we are, many of us are in silos in terms of our news media consumption. How can democracy thrive when it depends on Americans being informed about facts, not just your facts or my facts, but as close as we can get to the the truthful facts, when increasingly many Americans simply seek out news sources that confirm or reinforce rather than challenge their views, or at least present them with different views? What is the way out of that? I have yet to find someone on this broadcast who has the answer for that.
Well, I think that's because it's very tough, and there are no silver bullets, but let me tell you a few small things I think we can do. Number one, I think we can get the social media companies to try to give the people who are living in these informational bubbles a little more diverse flow of information, and to call out and downgrade deliberately false and polarizing and destructive forms of social media intervention, to take at least the worst forms of deception and toxicity either completely off their sites or to degrade their visibility. Secondly, I think we've got to start in the school system and renew a commitment to civic education, and from an early age teach tolerance, teach openness, teach a willingness to listen and debate, and encourage people to talk to one another across different partisan and programmatic orientations. We can do this, particularly in the high school system, but the problem is that we've become very apathetic about civic education in the United States. And then we got to look at the primary election process and look at the debates in the United States that are going to happen now as Iowa voters are increasingly paying attention with the progress toward the Iowa caucuses. How much are we going to learn from this spectacle of 20 people standing on a stage, each getting 5 minutes, and only probably talking to Democratic voters? I think we need different kinds of debates in the United States. You know, I talk in my book about a technique that we have pioneered through our Center for Deliberative Democracy at Stanford, and my colleague Jim Fishkin, who founded it, where instead of just polling people and saying, what do you think about this or that? Yeah, first you poll a random sample of a public. It could be in Iowa. It could be the American public. Then you bring them physically together into a place to deliberate on the issues you polled them on. You give them balanced briefing papers that have been vetted by competing experts, some on the left, some on the right, and the pros and cons of those issues. And you give them access to experts to debate those issues, and then you bring them together in small groups where they have to talk to one another and listen to one another and consider whether they might want to reevaluate some of their positions. When we have done these deliberative polls in a variety of jurisdictions, it could be in California on political reform. It could be in the whole European Union. My colleague Jim Fishkin is in Houston now doing it with respect to immigration. You find that when people can get outside the glare of cable television and social media and just talk to one another, citizen to citizen, under good conditions of civil discussion and skillful moderation, they actually sometimes reevaluate their positions and are able to move at least toward greater consensus. So I think we've got to develop and innovate new techniques for expressing public opinion and considering the issues.
Okay, Larry Diamond, we only have a few minutes left. A couple of important points I wanted to get your view on before we say goodbye today. The Iowa caucuses are the first time actual voters across the U.S. get up and go to say who they want to be president. Having studied democracy not only in this country but in dozens of countries across the world, do you think the Iowa caucuses are healthy for our democracy? Do you think it's good that the Iowa caucuses have so much influence?
Well, I think it's good that the political process begins at a small level where voters can have more intimate access to the candidates and register their opinion without one mass referendum in the whole country where kind of startup candidates would not be able to gain traction. I mean, if you just went immediately to a national primary, how would a Pete Buttigieg or, you know, Kamala Harris or, you know, a Tim Ryan on a different end of the spectrum in the party, or even Elizabeth Warren, really kind of break through? So I think that's healthy, and doing it in different parts of the country, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and then you move to Nevada, I think that's not a bad way of doing it. But I think these debates, and the way they're structured, is not a good way of doing it. And we need more innovation in the process. And I think deliberative polling has tremendous promise here. And I believe the voters of Iowa may be getting some new opportunities to benefit from that in the months to come.
Larry Diamond, I'd like to have you speak to Trump supporters who are no doubt listening to this conversation. As I'm sure you're aware, Iowa voted for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton by nearly 10 percentage points in 2016. What is your message for Trump supporters? I'm trying to imagine, because we have them call into this program, enthusiastic Trump supporters who are very happy with the first 2.5 years, approximately. They elected, they were disillusioned, dissatisfied with democracy, fighting. They wanted someone to fight entrenched bureaucracy, to blow it up. They wanted a disruptor, and they got it. What is your message for them?
Well, my message for them is, first of all, I respect your views as American citizens, and I certainly respect and want people on the other side of the spectrum to listen more carefully to the grievances that these voters have, both about the political process and about the arrogance and contempt of the knowledge elites on either coast, who think they're a bunch of backward hicks. I think this is part of the problem with American politics. And I would say on a variety of issues, whether it's immigration or the hollowing out of the manufacturing base of the United States, or the opioid crisis, or the distance of Washington from ordinary citizens, there are ways of coming to better policies that don't require the rhetorical contempt for democratic norms and the abuse of checks and balances and the rule of law that Donald Trump, I think, has evinced. And I think even many Trump supporters know in their heart of hearts, this is not a good thing, this kind of style, this kind of rhetoric, this kind of demeanor, this kind of lack of transparency on the part of Donald Trump. And so I would urge them to separate their forthright and principled and legitimate policy views and preferences from this kind of style of politics, and see and ask if there aren't better ways of achieving these policies that can uphold their programmatic concerns and objectives while not degrading our democracy.
All right. Thank you very much, Larry Diamond, for this half hour of conversation. Larry Diamond's latest book, Ill Winds, Saving Democracy from Russian Rage, Chinese Ambition, and American Complacency. Fascinating what you have to say, Larry. Could go on for a long time. That's all the time we have right now. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ben.
We appreciate it. Coming up after a short break, I'll talk with writer, illustrator, and cartoonist Zach Wienersmith. Perhaps you know his work. He's known for the award-winning webcomic Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal. His new book that he's written with his wife is called Soonish, 10 Emerging Technologies That'll Improve and or Ruin Everything. So, coming up in just a minute, technologies, how they could make our lives awesome, or what could terribly go wrong. A conversation with Zach Wienersmith in just a moment. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. ¶¶